accession number 5225, reel 5.
Mr. Butt, reel 4.
Yes, certainly. The upstairs, there was one large room which contained a double bed and a single bed, which is the one I occupied. It had a chest of drawers and a washstand with the statutory jug and basin, although I never used it, of course. I washed downstairs in the wash house. And to the right, at the top of the stairs, the room that was over the main living room of the house was permanently divided into two smaller rooms. The first being the bedroom that Mr. Haynes occupied, single bed against the window, a chest of drawers. On the chest of drawers was a clock with a pendulum, click, clock. He liked pendulum clocks. There was one downstairs as well. And also, which I could never understand, but it did hold a certain amount of fascination for me, he had a glass cabinet with a stuffed bird in it, complete with foliage. And I thought, well, what was the significance of the bird? Was it just decoration, or was it a bird that was peculiar to him, or what? But
did he ever say anything?
No, and I never asked, because one didn't ask those sort of questions, not those days. And then through the doorway, really it was a doorway, yes, but an opening, no door, there was just a curtain that went across, was Mrs. Haynes's room, where she had a double bed. And later on, after the war, when I used to visit, I would occupy the single bed. And surprise, surprise, Mr. and Mrs. Haynes would sleep together.
Did you think it was odd that they had almost separate bedrooms?
Oh, yes. But then, again, one didn't question. And this was country, and country folk are different from town folk. So it was acceptable to me. Mrs. Haynes, she had a lovely time in bed because, as I said, they had two dogs. One was Dinah, the other was Snip. And they would occupy the bed as well, perhaps starting on top of the bed. But by the end of the night, they would maybe snuggle down inside. It was a completely different way of life from what I'd been used to at home. But, oh, absolutely natural. So I didn't mind. And
how old were Auntie and Uncle?
Old. I've since found out that I'm not too good at remembering ages, except my own and my wife's and my children, but my parents' ages I've never questioned. But Auntie is just a few months older than my mother, and Uncle was much older than her, because this was his second wife. So one would assume he was 60 even in 1939, but he stayed absolutely featureless throughout my stay. So he was old.
Had they children?
Yes, they had. By the first marriage, there was a son married and a daughter unmarried. The son lived at Boughton-on-the-Water. And it was a ritual that once a fortnight, on Sunday morning, Uncle would put on his best suit and his best tie, his best cap, and cycle the 13 miles to Boughton-on-the-Water. And he
just
would.
Just him alone.
Just him alone. And he would, if the weather was right, he would take the shortcuts across the fields. But if they were too muddy, he would have to go the long way round by road. And he would leave about 9-ish and be home 1 o'clock. Time he would just go for the morning and see his son, his daughter-in-law, and their grandchild. The daughter would visit occasionally, but she was in service, and I never understood the reasons for her visits, and they were so irregular as to be no pattern at all. But I liked her. She took to me. And we were just generally happy. After a while, she moved from one employer to another one, nearer the town. In fact, she was working in a big house at Overnorton, which is about 2 miles from Chipping Norton. And on occasions, I used to go and visit her. But she was the sort of maid cook. Even in 1939, houses had people in service.
How was your schooling at this point?
Well, I thought this question would come up, but I can remember some of the schooling. A little bit difficult to put it all together to start with. Obviously, a whole school full of children suddenly descended on a town, stretched their resources to the ends. But we did meet daily in various places. One always got to know that that's where we met.
You mean you and your colleague?
Yes. I think that we were kept at home, as it were, for a while, and then the message got through, report such and such a time at such and such a place. And we would meet for half a day, various places. The Baptist Church was one. We went to the brewery a few times. It's a disused brewery in Back Lane. Didn't care for that much because there was no formal schooling, but we were kept together for morale purposes, or just to keep us, not off the streets, but off the fields, but just to keep some semblance of law and order. And one particular day, they said, right, we're going to have a boxing contest. Well, I didn't take to that at all, because I didn't like being hurt, so I dragged my feet, and luckily I wasn't called to box. I mentioned the Baptist Church. I think it's rather significant that at one stage while we were there, and this wasn't for very long, but at one stage we were there and we were given things to learn, and one of the things we were taught was the hymn Jerusalem. Well, I found this very hard going, and did those feet in. Oh, we learnt it parrot fashion. Dark satanic mills. Well, what's dark satanic mills? All right, there was Bliss's Tweed Mill down the Worcester Road, but I couldn't make the correlation between dark satanic mills and Bliss's Tweed Mill. This is all. And bring me my bow of burning gold. I thought this was patriotism gone wild, but we learned it, and I'm grateful for learning it. And of course, when I do sing it, which is very occasionally, I can remember the time of the learning of it.
When did the getting together again with your classmates start? I mean, was it right away while you were still at the Rites, or was there a vague period for a while when you didn't have any attempt at schooling at all?
I can't be sure. I think it must have been while I was at the Rites. But then, after a while, as the phony war, as we're told, went on, and disenchantment set in on both sides of the evacuee family, shall we say, the parents at home and the foster parents down there, children being homesick, no apparent danger, so numbers quickly dwindled. So much so that there was a manageable number of children to handle those that stayed behind. And then we actually shared school premises with the locals. And we would go to have formal education half a day a week. And they would have continue their formal education in the other half a day.
You said half a day a week.
Half of each day.
Yes.
Half of each day. So that was a 2.5 day week. I was trying to remember if we alternated 1 week mornings and the other week afternoons. And that went on. Again, numbers dwindled. And then so much again, even numbers dwindled more, that we were accommodated in the Church of England Church School, which is where we then resumed full-time education. I suppose by that time we had three teachers, although how many teachers went with us, I don't know.
Was your Mr. Worthington still there?
No, I think he got called up. It was an elderly teacher. I'm trying to think his name. It may have been Nolan, but I couldn't be sure. We carried on, as I say, with our formal education. The same sort of style that we had back at New City Road, i.e. you were given 20 words on a Monday morning, which one had to learn the spelling of throughout the week, and a test on Friday. Well, this pattern continued. We went round the coast of England for about the nth time. Well, I knew all the coastal towns off by heart, you see, and it was a bit of pride for my parents to hear that I was regarded as the encyclopedia. I didn't really know it. I'd heard it all before, so. And in a way, that was a little bit of my scholarly undoing, because knowing it all then, elementary school, it was a different kettle of fish when I went to the grammar school.
How would you compare the level of academic achievement, as it were, of the town children and the country children, reading, maths, things like that?
I laugh. We were having formal tuition, dry runs, as it were, for scholarship, and at the church school. And the scholarship candidates were put into another classroom so that we could go through past exam papers and get used to the form of the examination. And I can remember sitting at one end of an enormous classroom, quietly working away, and a geography lesson was going on with the locals by the headmaster, given by the headmaster. And he said, in one particular question, what is the capital of Tasmania? And he asked the question so many times, I just got fed up and said, Hobart. And he said, very good, until he found out that it was me that had answered. So he said, shut up, you, and get on with your work. So I think, well, I felt then that there was a difference in the level of education.
Was it just you, or do you think your fellow classmates from London were the same?
I think it was fellow classmates as well, because we did take the scholarship examination. That was terribly strange, because that took place on a Saturday morning. To go to school on a Saturday morning, no thank you very much. Oh, terrible. But we took the scholarship examination at the school where we had done our part-time education. So that was on home ground, as it were. And I just sailed through the papers and sent it all off, and a few weeks later I was called out in the front of the whole school, me and another boy, and we had passed. We were the only two that had passed. So scholarship, of course, mother was overjoyed. I was worried stiff. What did it mean? And then there was the perpetual debate as to where I would go to school. Obviously, I'd passed the scholarship, and this was administered by the education committee of the county borough of West Ham, as it were. and Plaistow Secondary School was evacuated to Newquay. But surely, why can't one continue one's education at the grammar school in the town? Well, this argument went over my head. But two of us did go to the grammar school in Chipping Norton. And I think it was the right decision. And I say that because I was used to the surroundings, the town, and I was comfortable, etc., etc. So it was bad enough moving to a new school and a new set of standards and new subjects without having to move to a totally foreign part of the country as well. So we were happy there, and I think it was the right thing to do.
Except I think you said you didn't do as well at secondary school.
Well, no. I found secondary school foreign to schooling that I had experienced previously. And there wasn't the close parental control, and the Haynes didn't quite know how to cope with the situation. They more or less supervised my homework. In other words, they made sure that, yes, my homework was attempted, but it was up to me to say whether I had finished, or finished, yes, I've had enough. I wanted to go out and play.
Were they able to help you with it?
No, not a... No way. I found it very difficult anyway, you see. Algebra, chemistry, French. Who wants to learn French at that age? No, thank you. And the whole system at the school was foreign. Formal classrooms for registration, as it were. And then you moved around the school for each lesson. Hadn't been used to that idea at all. The examination results, or rather the end of term reports, they weren't marks out of 10. It was A, B, C, D and E. And the worst thing you could get was a red E, which I got for French regularly. And that was, beyond the pale. Didn't do at all well. What put me off, and perhaps this was my naivety that I should have overcome, or whether it wasn't explained to me. The first time we got to school, and I can see the classroom now, it was round the back and down the little, well, right round by the gym, and then into the classroom. In comes Mr. Rose, and he says, right, well, we'll do the timetable. Timetable, I thought, well, I know my times table, but I know twice one is two, right up to 12, 144. But this was the timetable for the day, the order of lessons, and that put me off right from the word go. And really, I don't think I looked forward from then. I was kept very much in the background.
Look, presumably this sort of problem would be the same with every child starting at grammar school.
Well, yes.
Things would be very different.
I'm sure it would.
I wonder if your evacuation had anything to do with your not settling in, or if it was an unfortunate coincidence.
An unfortunate coincidence which I perhaps took full advantage of, because away from parental control, I would struggle with homework. I would try to succeed, but I found it difficult. And simultaneous equations, or struggled for that for a long time until they were explained to me, and now I can do simultaneous equations standing on my head. But one of the science teachers, she really upset me. So I'm a bit of a rebel, really. I'm all right until I'm upset, and then I dig my heels in, and that's it. We had a lesson in science, and it was to do with liquids and water in particular, and she had put a glass of water on a saucer on the teaching desk, and in this glass of water she put a strand of string, which was looped into the water and over the side of the glass onto the saucer. Surprise, surprise, the water seeped up the string and drip, drip, drip onto the saucer. Fascinating. A couple of weeks later, we had a test. Question: does water run uphill? Well, what a ridiculous question. Everybody knows water runs downhill. Ah, but wait a minute, that water went up the string. This is a trick question. Yes, water does run uphill. Wrong. As I say, that upset me. So I didn't like being tricked. But we managed. I didn't pass the scholarship. I did pass the scholarship, but my grammar school education turned out to be a dismal failure.
What about your history lessons? I wonder if there was anything about the war.
I can't remember. Although one teacher, the history mistress, no, nothing about the war, because it was more ancient history. It was a question of sit down, open your books, copy what I've written on the blackboard about India and places like that. So it was more ancient history rather than modern history. But of course the war was rewriting the history books. And one saw evidence of war in holiday times and out of school times.
Of course. I wondered if it came into your formal lessons in any way.
Not that
I
can remember.
If not history, then in some other way.
No, not that I can remember. Because I was being educated, of course, alongside the country children. And they would come in from the towns and villages from as far away as Woodstock, even. Kingham, Churchill, all the outlying villages. And it was a great joy when, in the winter time, the buses couldn't get through the snow. And I would trudge up to school, because I walked everywhere. I trudged up to school on the Monday morning. By 10:30, the buses hadn't arrived and we were dismissed. Whoopee, got the day off. Next day, same again. Well, this went on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I just didn't bother. But there was no school either, so we had the week off.
How did Mr. and Mrs. Haynes and your parents respond to your bad report? Your red E in French.
Well, there were words spoken in my absence and whisper, 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 he isn't doing so well, etc., etc. And when parents would visit during the school holidays, at report time, I would be taken for a walk by my father, and then we would have a discussion, and I would drag my feet and promise to do better, etc., etc. And I always dreaded that time of the year and those visits, because I knew what it would end up as, a sort of heart-to-heart, and yes, I will promise. And I tried, but I found it difficult.
So that kind of talk was only up to your real parents, and the Haynes had nothing to do with that?
Well, I suppose the Haynes were formally charged by my parents to make sure that I did spend time at homework. Perhaps there was a regulation 2 hours a night I was to be seen to be doing it. But then I only had to say I'd finished, and who were they to argue?
What sort of discipline did the Haynes keep?
Quite strict, although I didn't abuse it. There was once when I had misbehaved and I was told I'm not to go out, and I did. And Mr. Haynes found out that I had gone out, and so he whacked me. I didn't take kindly to that. But by and large, it was a happy time that I was there. So there was no need for strict discipline. One got up to boyish pranks, but certain things, one was, whether one was expected to help or whether they thought it was good for me to do it. I did help with some of the household chores, like cleaning the silver on a Saturday morning, or picking the fruit in season, helping to dig the garden again in season, removing last year's dried beans from the runner bean sticks, things like that. And I was expected or encouraged to do these jobs before I could, as and when, before I could go out to play.
Had you had similar jobs to do at home?
Well, no, because I think that I, being younger, and those jobs weren't there to be done anyway.
Well, you could have polished the silver or dusted the sideboard or
something. Ah, yes, yes, you're quite right. One was encouraged to go around doing the dusting, and dusting the legs of the chairs and the table. And a bit of polishing, yes. And I suppose I felt it was a bit in for a dig because I was away from home, yet still encouraged to, or expected to, polish the silver. But Saturday morning with the brasso, yes, on the kitchen table.
How formal were they? You said you called them auntie and uncle instead of Mr. and Mrs. Did they expect you to treat them almost like parents, or to be more formal in their house?
No, I think it was a family relationship. Auntie and uncle was a form of affection, as well as being easier to say. And they treated me as a second son, and I was quite contented. He took a very close interest in me. For instance, in that time in the social calendar, one was not expected to wear long trousers until one was 12 years old. But at the age of 10, I still had short trousers. And walking from the town to the Haynes' home in winter time, with the cold wind searing across the open fields, the bottoms of my thighs, all round the knees, really got chapped. So much so that I used to sit down in the evening and the chaps would open slightly and bleed, and then the blood would dry and I would stiffen up, and it would be agony.